Hello and welcome to the Arizona Capital Times on Sun Sounds. My name is John Coe. I am in Flagstaff, and I will be your volunteer reader for today, reading articles that were published in the Arizona Capital Times on or about April 25th, 2025. Headline: Governor Katie Hobbs signs bipartisan bill funding disabilities agency. Written by Jacob Thorington and published in the Arizona Capital Times on April 24th, 2025. With less than a week to spare before the Division of Developmental Disabilities runs out of money, Governor Katie Hobbs has signed a bipartisan emergency funding measure which covers the $122 million shortfall that the program is facing. DDD will run out of money on May 1st without the supplemental funding bill, and lawmakers have argued for weeks about how to provide it to ensure the program can support the 60,000 people that use DDD services. The House and Senate both passed the supplemental House bill 2945 with supermajorities, but the outcome of the bill was unclear when House of Representatives first took the floor on April 23rd after Governor Katie Hobbs had vowed to veto a previous version of the bill that Senate Republicans had passed earlier in the day along party lines. It could not have been done without two key House leaders of each caucus, House Majority Whip Julie Willoughby, a Republican from Chandler, and Assistant Minority Leader Nancy Gutierrez, a Democrat from Tucson. House Republicans were divided on the earlier Senate measure, and when it became clear they didn't have enough votes to align the measure with the Senate changes or to get the bill out of the chamber with no Democrats supporting it, House leaders immediately went into recess. Gutierrez said on April 24th that she and Willoughby met after the House recessed. Both started working to find consensus on the bill within their own ranks and made concessions to ensure the funding bill would pass and would be signed by the governor. Quote, "It was two women who did not allow ego to get in the way of what was right," Gutierrez said. About 3 hours later, at 7:30 p.m., the House resumed discussion of the bill with a bipartisan agreement, and the measure passed 48 to 11. Quote, "I wish it could have worked out a little differently from the way I thought, but here we are with a supermajority on this board, enacting this legislation with an emergency to get these resources to families," said Representative Matt Gress, a Republican from Phoenix. House Republicans also expressed appreciation to Willoughby for her work on the issue. Willoughby had earlier negotiated a bipartisan amendment to the bill when it was heard in the House Appropriations Committee. However, the committee chairman, Representative David Livingston, a Republican from Peoria, added three Republicans to the committee, which prevented the amendment from being included in the bill. Three Republicans joined Democrats in supporting Willoughby's amendment. One of the Republicans who supported Willoughby's amendment was her seatmate, Representative Jeff Weniger, a Republican from Chandler, who thanked Willoughby for her efforts on the issue. Quote, "Representative Willoughby's courage to stick to her guns in committee was an inspiration to me, and I think it got us to where we are today," Weniger said. Hobbs expressed support for the bipartisan bill shortly after it passed the House the night of April 23rd. Quote, "After months of confusion and uncertainty for countless families, tonight we took an important first step toward delivering critical funding to continue vital services for Arizonans with Down syndrome, autism, cerebral palsy, and other developmental disabilities," Hobbs said in a news release. Quote, "I am grateful to see House members on both sides of the aisle come together to advance common sense proposals. This deal ensures critical services for disabled Arizonans will continue, delivers reasonable guardrails for the Parents as Paid Caregivers program, and protects funding to respond to Arizonans' housing needs." One of the main concerns from Democrats and the governor on the earlier version of the bill was that it proposed taking $38 million from the Housing Trust Fund to help cover the DDD shortfall. The Housing Trust Fund has helped Arizonans find affordable housing since 1988, and Hobbs warned that using the money from the fund could lead to litigation against the state, since trust fund money has already been awarded to developers and ongoing construction projects. Instead, lawmakers are now covering the shortfall entirely from the Prescription Drug Rebate Fund, which Republicans and Democrats say has more than $300 million to fill DDD's funding gap. Republicans also initially proposed reducing the maximum weekly hours paid to parents enrolled in parents as caregivers to 20 hours per child, but Democrats and members of the DDD community argued that that was insufficient for families. The measure now allows a 40-hour weekly cap per child with guardrails to ensure payments for the program go to parents who are actively caring for their children at home. It also establishes an electronic visit verification system from the Department of Economic Security and only allows parents to provide attendant care between 6 a.m. and 10 p.m. Quote, "We heard from families, providers, and budget experts, and we acted to protect essential services and ensure the program's long-term stability. This is a win for Arizonans and a step toward greater accountability in how public dollars are spent," House Speaker Steve Montenegro, a Republican from Goodyear, said in a news release. Republicans also got language into the bill which provides $355,000 to the Auditor General's office to conduct a special audit of the Parents as Paid Caregivers program by October 1, 2026. Many GOP lawmakers have expressed concerns with the rapid enrollment growth of the program, which launched during the COVID pandemic. Quote, "This has not been easy, but we will help save lives," Livingston said. "One of my hopes is the tough lessons that we've learned going through this bill, we can directly apply next week and start working on the budget and getting out of here before Memorial Day." The Senate later passed the bill 28-1 on April 24th, and Senator Annalise Ortiz, a Democrat from Phoenix, also said she hopes lawmakers have learned lessons from the negotiations and the shameful antics of HB 2945. Quote, "Let the women take care of this," Gutierrez said. "I hope that's what their caucus has learned." Headline: 2026 election fatigue is already hitting the Capitol. Written by Reagan Priest and published in the Arizona Capital Times on April 25, 2025. With candidacy announcements, endorsements, and fundraising requests plaguing inboxes and social media feeds, it would almost seem like November 3, 2026 is just around the corner. In reality, Election Day is more than 550 days away, and all of the talk about its impending arrival is proving exhausting for those who work in politics and ineffective for the voters that they are trying to reach. Consultants say much of the current talk around 2026 is premature and is not breaking through to the average voter who will show up at a polling place on Election Day. Quote, "What I see right now is just this ping-pong match that goes on between MAGA and the left, which everybody in our industry covers and pays attention to," said Chuck Coughlin, CEO of public affairs firm High Ground. "But it really doesn't matter, right? It really doesn't resonate beyond those bases." Coughlin said he attributes the nonstop nature of elections nowadays to the 24-hour media cycle and the rise in social media. But that also means that only the most plugged-in voters are consuming early election coverage. Quote, "The aggressively identified base, the 20% of Republican voters that show up in a primary, the 15% of Democratic voters who show up in their primary, that's who's paying attention to all of this," Coughlin said. "They're driving the narrative. It's not the 80% of voters who will show up in the general election." Even Governor Katie Hobbs, who was running for re-election in 2026, said she is not thinking that far ahead. Quote, "I'm not focused on an election that is 18 months away," Hobbs told reporters at a press conference on April 22nd when she was asked about her re-election chances. But that hasn't stopped her campaign or other campaigns from staffing up, sending out press releases, and courting donors for funds. Many candidates for statewide office, such as Secretary of State and Treasurer, have announced their campaigns in recent weeks, and similar announcements are far from over. Polling on the Republican side even indicates that voters are not interested in talking about candidates. A recent poll commissioned by the Club for Growth PAC found that 39% of Republican voters remain undecided about gubernatorial candidates. Another poll found that 78% of voters are undecided on a candidate in the Republican primary for attorney general. Consultants on both sides of the aisle say they have received countless questions about the potential impact that current events in state and national politics could have on the 2026 election, but most agree that many of the biggest issues of early 2025 do not have the staying power to impact an election that is more than a year away. For example, Stacey Pearson, a Democratic consultant, said she doesn't think the bill moratorium announced by Hobbs on April 17th as a result of the dispute over the funding of the Division of Developmental Disabilities is something that voters will remember when casting their ballots. Quote, I've spent my entire career in politics, and I don't think the average voter gives a flying rat's behind, Pearson said. The average voter certainly isn't going to care about it in 560 days. She and other Democrats also don't see recent spats with the Democratic Party as impacting the election. Recently, the state party chair publicly criticized the state's United States senators, prompting them, along with the top three statewide Democrats, to issue a joint statement in response. Stephen Slogocki, a Democratic consultant and former Maricopa County Democratic Party chair, said he thinks voters have bigger fish to fry than state party infighting. Quote, I think people are focused on their 401ks, their job security, gas prices, things like that, Slogocki said. Coughlin said both parties should focus on finding a cohesive message to enter 2026 with and work on voter registration in the meantime, and when possible, step away from the speculation and buzz around elections. Quote, stop thinking about it, Coughlin said. Go live your life. Go to the grocery store. Love your kids. Love your neighbors. Build your social group around what matters to you and ignore the rest. You're listening to the Arizona Capital Times on Sunsounds of Arizona. Sunsounds of Arizona has been providing information access since 1979, and you can always listen to our live stream at sunsounds.org. Headline. Officials expect 100 million gallons of water a day from advanced purification facilities. Written by Kira Riley and published in the Arizona Capital Times on April 26th. 2025. After a legislative directive and an extensive stakeholder and rulemaking process, Arizona now has the administrative infrastructure to start advanced water purification to transform wastewater into potable drinking water. With permit requirements now in place, the Arizona Department of Environmental Quality, the Arizona Department of Water Resources, and municipal utilities hope potable reuse will create positive ripple effects in drought resilience, water quality, and security. Quote, I wouldn't be surprised at all if we weren't seeing upwards of 100 million gallons of water a day reused through advanced water purification 10 years out from now, Randall Mattis, Water Quality Division Deputy Director for ADEQ, said. Quote, I think it really will be a game changer when we look at long-term water stability. The state first inched toward advanced water purification in 2018 with a rule change allowing for direct potable reuse, setting basic requirements and eventually resulting in a single demonstration permit for Scottsdale Water to demonstrate at the city's advanced water treatment facility. In 2022, the legislature, as part of the Environment Budget Bill, directed the Arizona Department of Environmental Quality to, quote, adopt all rules necessary to establish and implement a direct potable reuse of treated wastewater program, including the creation of a permit process. ADEQ created a technical advisory group composed of utilities, academics, local government, engineers, contractors, and the general public to draft the new rules for the process. All in all, the change in administrative code sets up a permitting process with checks to ensure any applicant can demonstrate the technical, managerial, and financial capacity to operate and fund an advanced water purification project. Each applicant is held to a set of quality, monitoring, and reporting standards, with required information and checks on the initial water source, a testing plan, and a response to off-specific water or water that fails to meet the standards. The rules for water quality require examining pathogens and chemicals, adhering to the same maximum contaminant levels set out in the Federal Safe Drinking Water Act, and adding a list of advanced water project-specific contaminants. Mattis said there is constant monitoring built into the process from the water source through each level of purification. Quote, the whole thing is built on many safety steps along the way to ensure that water is tested and verified at each step and that all those barriers work together to give us this quality water, Mattis said. On March 4th, the Governor's Regulatory Review Council gave the proposed rules the green light, followed by a sign-off by the Secretary of State the same day. The road to securing a permit is long, as interested applicants must build the infrastructure necessary to qualify first. However, efforts in Scottsdale and Phoenix are already underway. Nazario Prieto, Assistant Water Services Director at the City of Phoenix, said the city took some calculated risks in beginning to build out an advanced water purification facility at the shuttered Cave Creek Water Reclamation Plant adjacent to the Union Hills Water Treatment Plant. Construction got underway last year amid the rulemaking process. Quote, we put some forethought into how we leverage the existing infrastructure that's there and the treatment plant that's across the street, Prieto said. And knowing that the rules were coming, how can we make the most out of this next design of that treatment plant to be able to set us up in a really good place for advanced purified water? Beyond the Cave Creek plant, Phoenix plans to build a similarly sized facility north of the Central Arizona project around I-17. Construction is expected to start sometime in the next 5 years. The city also plans to build another much larger plant by the 91st Avenue Wastewater Treatment Plant. As part of the rulemaking, ADEQ incorporated a provision requiring all water provider agencies to develop and implement a public communication plan to notify, address public concerns, and garner greater confidence and acceptance of the advanced water purification process. Two statewide surveys conducted by ADEQ in 2023 and 2024 showed a fair amount of comfortability, with about 75% of respondents saying they would be willing to drink advanced water purification water, while about a quarter still had reservations given a lack of information or the yuck factor in considering its initial wastewater state. Though Prieto estimates that the city will be able to start producing potable drinking water at its Cave Creek plant by 2027, the facility will initially launch a pilot program. This program will involve sending purified water to recharge basins, demonstrating the plant's capabilities and safety to the public through tours. Quote, we want them to come in if they have concerns, if they have questions. We want them to not only ask us questions, we want them to tour the facilities, Prieto said. After going and seeing what we're doing, hopefully they'll want to taste the water. I think that's going to go a long way towards helping inform some of those customers who maybe aren't so excited about this new process. After the pilot, the city would then seek to fulfill the permit to ADEQ to dispense the water into the potable water system. Quote, we think that this is a project that sets Phoenix up well into the future, Prieto said. Future generations will look back and say that it was great that we were able to move forward with this. Gretchen Baumgartner, water policy manager for the city of Scottsdale, said the city is in the process of updating its existing purification plant to meet this new set of standards. But in thinking about expanding the program into the future, Baumgartner stressed the importance of continuing to fund new areas of water innovation. Quote, we're a desert city in a desert valley, and we can't march through into the future doing the same things that we've done in the past, Baumgartner said. If we want to continue to be a wonderful, smart, economically viable city and valley, we need to figure out and make sure that we all understand that that's going to happen with infrastructure investment. Headline, Preston's Law targets aggravated assaults by gangs. written by Jamar Younger and published in the Arizona Capital Times on April 25, 2025. A bill that would impose strict penalties for groups who assault individuals and cause physical injuries is one step closer to passing the legislature after the Senate approved the measure during a Committee of the Whole session on April 22nd. House Bill 2611 was introduced in response to the beating and death of 16-year-old Preston Lord in 2023 after he was attacked at a Halloween party in Queen Creek. His death was connected to a gang of teens known as the Gilbert Goons, who were known for assaulting people in the area. Seven individuals were charged with first-degree murder. The bill would create a new category of aggravated assault for swarming, where at least two accomplices are present when an attacker targets a victim. This type of attack would become a Class 4 felony, which would prevent it from being treated like a misdemeanor. The bill would also expand aggravated assaults to include categories of workers such as first responders, teachers and school employees, healthcare workers, park rangers, prosecutors, and public defenders. The Senate adopted an amendment introduced by Senator John Kavanaugh, a Republican from Fountain Hills, during Committee of the Whole talks, specifying that a swarming attack must result in a physical injury in order to be classified as an aggravated assault. Representative Matt Gress, a Republican from Phoenix and the bill's sponsor, said during the Senate Judiciary and Elections Committee hearing on March 26th that the legislation would serve as an effective tool to deter the type of attacks which led to Lord's death, as well as serious injuries sustained by victims in similar attacks. Quote, "I believe it's really an important tool for our prosecutors to have to keep our communities safe," Gress said. Maricopa County Attorney Rachel Mitchell said at the hearing that the current law allows these attacks to be classified as Class 6 felonies, which can result in probation for the attacker and even be converted to a misdemeanor. Quote, "This type of crime is so serious, I don't need to convince anybody here that it can be deadly," said Mitchell, who worked with Gress to introduce the bill. Melissa Ciccante, Lord's stepmother, spoke in support of the bill at the hearing, describing her stepson's murder as an act of, quote, "pure cruelty." Quote, "There are no words strong enough to describe the pain of losing him. No words that undo the senseless and brutal act that robbed him of his future, his dreams, and his place in our lives," Ciccante said. She referred to the bill as more than just a piece of legislation, but also as a necessary step towards justice. Quote, "The passage of Preston's law is not just necessary, it is imperative," she said. "It sends a clear message that if you choose violence, you will be held accountable. We owe it to every victim of senseless violence. Let us make sure Preston's name is not just a memory, but a catalyst for change." Despite the testimony, there were still concerns from some lawmakers and speakers that the bill could lead to children involved in schoolyard fights to become facing felony convictions. Kavanaugh introduced an amendment to alleviate those concerns. However, Senator Lauren Kuby, a Democrat from Tempe, said during the Committee of the Whole session that even with the amended language, the bill did not adequately address those concerns. Quote, "It should clarify that the assault resulted in a serious physical injury," Kuby said. "Without the inclusion of the word serious, kids in a schoolyard altercation will end up being charged with a Class 4 felony for what should be a misdemeanor merely because they're in a group and have aided in a misdemeanor assault." Kavanaugh said he was willing to broker negotiations with stakeholders in order to further address those concerns. Headline: Mays and AGs from other states sue to block Trump tariffs. Written by Howard Fisher and published in the Arizona Capital Times on April 23, 2025. Attorney General Chris Mays wants the United States Court of International Trade to strike down as illegal the host of international tariffs imposed by President Trump. On April 23rd, Mays, along with counterparts in other states, acknowledged that there are situations in which a president can impose tariffs on an emergency basis, but she said these are for limited reasons and must, by law, be of limited duration. By contrast, Mays said, the president has simply declared that the trade imbalance with other countries justifies imposing tariffs. Quote, These edicts reflect a national trade policy that now hinges on the president's whims rather than the sound exercise of his lawful authority, the lawsuit says. By claiming the authority to impose immense and ever-changing tariffs on whatever goods entering the United States he chooses, for whatever reason he finds convenient to declare an emergency, the president has upended the constitutional order and brought chaos to the American economy. The lawsuit also takes a separate swat at the excuse the president gave for specific tariffs on products from Mexico, Canada, and China, that they were involved in the smuggling of drugs and migrants into the United States. It says there is no rationale between those claims and simply tacking what amounts to a surcharge on the price of items from those countries to United States customers. Mays, who is co-leading the lawsuit with Dan Rayfield, the Attorney General of the state of Oregon, said that this is an important argument over presidential powers. She said that the Arizona Department of Transportation has contracts to buy many pieces of equipment, parts, and supplies, many of which are imported from other countries. Quote, the tariffs are already increasing costs for ADOT, the lawsuit states. That includes one contractor seeking a price increase citing higher tariffs. Mays also said that state universities conducting research are likely to be affected because of, quote, specialized equipment not available from domestic sources. She specifically cited technology that allows for seamless assembly of multiple semiconductor chips, with her office saying that there is no commercial capacity for this technology that exists now within the United States. Mays said the tariffs on this project alone could increase costs by $1.4 million. But the challengers say the effects will be much broader. They say that even studies done by the administration conclude that 95% of the tariffs, essentially a tax on imports, will be paid by individuals and companies here. Costs aside, the lawsuit asks the court to declare that there's no legal basis for what the president is doing. Quote, the Constitution assigns to Congress, not to the president, the power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imports, and excises, it says. And then there's what the challengers say is the arbitrary nature of the tariffs, which start at 10%. Quote, the worldwide tariff orders even impose tariffs on places that are not involved in international trade, the lawsuit says. That ranges from the military base on the Indian Ocean island of Diego Garcia to the Heard and McDonald Islands, about 2,500 miles southwest of Australia, which is only home to penguins and no humans. The bottom line, according to the challenges, is that nothing in this has to do with actions by other countries, but simply that consumers and companies in the United States buy more from many other countries than their residents purchase from firms in the United States. You've been listening to the Arizona Capital Times, a production of Sun Sounds of Arizona in Flagstaff. Once again, my name is John Coe. Thank you for listening.